This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Sneak Attack on Labor History, a conversation with Bradley Wiedmeyer. Today, we have a special program on Taking Aim. We're having a conversation with architectural historian Bradley Wiedmeyer, one of our longest comrade, colleague, and dear friend. Bradley discovered the proposed demolition of a historic labor building. The landmark building that was ground zero for the 1934 San Francisco general strike is targeted for demolition. From 1933 through 1935, the International Longshoremen's Association, now the ILWU, Local 38 to 79 Hall was located at 113 Stewart Street in San Francisco. The hall was the nerve center of the month-long 1934 waterfront maritime strike. It was here that on Bloody Thursday, July 5th, 1934, police and deputies shot scores of union members, and where the bodies of two murdered union members lay in state for 4 days. The massive funeral procession of the ILA martyrs on Monday, July 9th, led from this hall at 113 Stewart Street on the San Francisco waterfront to Market Street, the main street of San Francisco, and across the city. This great silent march electrified working people around the world. It galvanized organized labor and the broadest support for the resulting general strike, one of the key moments of the United States labor history. Now, one of the largest real estate organizations in the world, the Hines Interest Limited Partnership, plans to demolish this historic building and erect a 10-story office building. The developer's political consultant and lobbyist, David Luman, lobbied the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors. The developer presented a historic resource analysis that the Planning Commission accepted. This false analysis asserted that, quote, neither the building nor any of the early tenants contributed significantly to the development of the San Francisco waterfront, end quote. We ask, whose history? Theirs or ours? There is no time to lose. We must preserve our history. We must keep 113 Stewart Street from the wrecking ball of rapacious developers. On Tuesday, March 17th at 4 p.m., the San Francisco Board of Supervisors has an opportunity to prevent this from happening. We urge the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to do the right thing. Overturn the negative determination of the Planning Commission and save one of San Francisco's greatest historic sites and a symbol for organized labor throughout the world. Today on Taking Aim, we discuss this incredible history and what you can do to preserve it. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let me state from the beginning that what we're dealing with here is a sneak attack. Brothers and sisters, this is the 75th anniversary of the historic maritime strike and general strike and Bloody Thursday, the event that absolutely brought the U.S. labor movement of age, that galvanized working people across the world, that remains today a symbol for every union and working class organization of heroic struggle and the ability to sustain under an unrestricted police and army assault upon the working class in San Francisco. Well, the sneak attack took place, brothers and sisters, because what the developer did was to go before the planning board and give a fake address to the location they wanted to transform. What they did was they called it 110 the Embarcadero, which doesn't exist because that's the address they intend to impose with their high-rise building. Consequently, not even the ILWU or labor militants or activists were cognizant of the plot afoot. And the resonance of this is very significant. Brothers and sisters, let me outline this for you. Who is this developer? The developer, Hines Real Estate, Hines Interest Limited Partnership, describes itself as follows. Hines is involved in real estate development, investment, and property management worldwide, including over 1,100 properties representing 457 million square feet, with offices in over 100 cities in 16 countries, and controlled assets valued at $25.6 billion. Hines is one of the largest real estate organizations in the world. And brothers and sisters, figure it out. They're major contributors to the Democratic and Republican parties, depending on who's in power, and in cities across the United States. And Hines enjoys a major role in the profiteering that results from the high-rise development of San Francisco, the runaway cost of housing in the city, and consequently, one-on-one, direct involvement in the current capitalist crisis that has engulfed the nation and the world. So you can begin to understand the class issues here, brothers and sisters. The developer's political consultant and lobbyist, David Luman, set up meetings with each supervisor to lobby him and her individually for the destruction of the ILA building and the hall at 113 Stewart Street without identifying it. Luman's mandate was to secure the replacement of Labor's historic site with this huge development at 110 Embarcadero, which they repackaged with through this hired lobbyist as, quote, the greenest building in the world. Now, Hines's hired hands, Page and Turnbull, Inc., dutifully prepared a study entitled Historic Resource Analysis, and in setting forth its criteria for preserving an existing building, the Page and Turnbull document asserted baldly the following, and listen to this. Neither the building nor any of the early tenants contributed significantly to the development of the San Francisco waterfront. And it added, inter alia, the following coup de grace. Quote, none of the early owners or tenants associated with this building have played a significant role in the development of San Francisco, unquote. If anything so clearly manifests the agenda of the forces behind this classic speculators' undertaking and their manipulation of the planning board and commission and by intention the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, this is it. The development of San Francisco and those who contributed to it is meant literally. Language, brothers and sisters, no less than history and the needs of the people who inhabit our city had been perverted by speculators. It's real estate speculators in their consciousness and language who, quote, develop, unquote, our cities and who, quote, contribute, unquote, to the political parties in office to do so. The destruction of an affordable living environment for working people, the elimination of affordable housing, that's the price of development. Rapacious profiteering is then the sole criterion for, quote, progress, unquote, if ever. The class issues that define the significance and history of 113 Stewart Street and this plot to destroy it were crystallized for all with eyes to see. It is in this cynical assault, brothers and sisters, upon the lives and struggles of working people and upon the labor town of San Francisco. Because whose history is this? Theirs or ours? Whose history is embodied in the ILA Hall at 113 Stewart Street? What's the social and historical replacement that Hines has engineered with the Planning Department and Commission pursuant to the Board of Supervisors meeting on the 17th?
Bradley, could you tell us more about Stewart Street?
Stewart Street is a center of the maritime unions historically. It goes back to the 19th century. The next-door building was the seventh landmark in San Francisco designated. It was primarily designated for its architectural history and, unfortunately, its role played in housing. The Siemens Union of the Pacific was of secondary consideration, but it was landmarked early on. And across the street from 113 Stewart Street, we see the whole historic district, the San Francisco Historic Waterfront District. These buildings are right adjacent to 113 Stewart Street. And the rest of Stewart Street also was a tremendously important maritime labor center. The next door building, 123, housed unions. After the ILA moved out and onto bigger location, several unions, the Caulkers Union, the Boat Right Union, were located in the same hall following the ILA. And across the street, Historically, this was the center of maritime unions. There's no question that that history is associated with this building.
All of waterfront working class activity, the jointers, boat builders, shipwrights, ship caulkers. I mean, it was the focal point for exactly what it is, the waterfront district, the centerpiece of the classic working class of San Francisco.
Brad, let's look at what actually took place at 113 Stewart Street. You did a remarkable uncovering of the newspaper accounts and the day-by-day history of the maritime strike. So let's discuss that a bit. The ILA Hall was the nerve center of the 1934 maritime strike from May 9th, 1934, through the general strike of 1934. And you pointed out that the vote to strike actually took place in March, on March 7th. This building and the very hall on the second floor served as the headquarters of the ILA and of the strike committee that prepared, coordinated, and led these seminal struggles. And it's the site where Harry Bridges, the foremost leader of the ILWU, first displayed his leadership. This is the hall that working people across the West Coast looked to.
And it's where they found their voice.
Right. And from it emerged not just Harry Bridges, but Henry Schmidt, Dutch Dietrich, and John Shoemaker. It's the hall where they honed their leadership, coordinated the workers' response to state repression, and where the general strike was born.
The local was new. It was only created in 1933, and it represents the history not only of the lead up to the strike on May 9th, but throughout the 83 days of the strike. It was central to that whole struggle. And Bloody Thursday activities took place outside. The leadership, the strike leadership, was centered there, as well as the union local activities.
Brothers and sisters, if Brad had not uncovered the sleight of hand that the developer and that the Planning Commission had inflicted here, as I mentioned, the brothers and sisters, I was talking to Peter Olney yesterday in the international at ILWU, and my brother Olney was saying that they didn't have it. They had no clue. This had been concealed from them. Bradley is the person who uncovered this deception, this fraud, and nowhere is it more powerfully evoked for its significance than in the account of what, in fact, occurred at the hall, because this document, this historic document, very expensively produced, detailed, lobbied for by Lumen, with every member of the Planning Commission and of the Board of Supervisors, fabricates in every last particular the historic reality. This hall was the center of the month-long waterfront maritime strike. This hall was ground zero on Bloody Thursday, July 5th, 34, when police and deputies shot on orders scores of union members, where Howard Sperry was martyred in front of the adjacent building. The bodies of brothers Sperry and Nick Bordeaux, killed in the next block, lay in state in the hall for 4 days. The massive funeral procession of the ILA martyrs on Monday, July 9th, led from the hall to Market Street and across the city. It was this great silent march that electrified working people across the world, galvanized organized labor, and the broadest support for the general strike itself. The march, however, did not begin until the personal funeral services for the families and friends of labor's martyrs had concluded in the hall, resonating throughout the city, electrifying, as I say, the working population of San Francisco. And word of these solemn services spread everywhere by word of mouth. The vast outpouring that led to the general strike aborted police plans to shoot down the strikers en masse in San Francisco, as the Hearst and established press then as now were urging in hysterical and thinly veiled language. So the hall, the ILA Hall, 1934, is the birthplace of the seminal struggles that impelled the bitter, bloody, and ongoing quest for workplace justice and organization for workers in every walk of life. It began there, and it began on the waterfront. It was nurtured by the ILA, and it was enacted in this hall. On July 6, 1934, brothers and sisters, the Hearst San Francisco Examiner ran a front-page headline, quote, "Fierce fight rages all day over length of waterfront," quote, "Two men shot to death. One near death from bullets, 27 suffering from gunshot wounds, 45 beaten, clubbed, and gassed. A woman and two other passengers shot as they met on a streetcar. Such was the toll yesterday, and the Marines strike as the bloodiest and most widespread rioting and fighting in the history of San Francisco raged all over the waterfront. The riots raged from early morning until after dark. They raged from the 3rd and Townsend Street stations to Fisherman's Wharf, from the Embarcadero several blocks uptown. The strikers numbered as high as 5,000, infuriated, slugging, rock-throwing, club-wielding men. The rioting crowds were opposed by practically the whole police department of more than 1,000 men, led personally by Police Chief Quinn, and for the first time since the strike began, the police poured solid lead into the crowds as they emptied their revolvers time and time again into mobs of strikers who refused to fall back, stood firm, refused to obey police orders, attacked police automobiles, buried bricks and scrap iron back at the police bullets, gas, shells, and tear gas bombs. And the article continues. The rioting grew in intensity as the day aged, and then the police poured lead from their revolvers into the jammed streets, and men were falling left and right. They'll never count, brothers and sisters, the number of dead and wounded in this great uprising. The article continues. The rioting grew in intensity as the day aged. Then the police poured lead from their revolvers into the jammed streets. Police and state troops employed a newly developed type of gas today, recommended to them by Ignatius McCarthy, the chemical warfare expert. The new gas affects its inhalers violently and renders them immediately unfit for action and leaves them ailing. They're using chemical warfare weapons, brothers and sisters. In 1934, the ruling class never changes.
Ralph, we should note here they're talking about riots. In fact, you had peaceful demonstrators and the police were attacking. So you have, once again, as you're talking about the Hearst newspapers, rallying the San Francisco people against the workers when, in fact, you had the police suppressing the long-suffering workers. And what you have, again, is the workers standing firm against police repression.
Well, that's important to say, Maya. I mean, to give you a flavor, brothers and sisters, of what the boss's press is about, a 380-truck caravan has been on the way to Gaza, Palestine, from Great Britain, driving across the world, highlighted in every headline in every country across the world.
Except the United States.
That's what I'm about to say, Maya. 3 kilometers long, brothers and sisters, joined by trucks everywhere. 100 trucks joined it in Libya, carrying medical supplies, carrying food, carrying the means of survival for the besieged population of Gaza. Try to find a picture, try to find a mention, try to find a story in the bougie press, in the New York Times. Look at CNN, see if you see any images of it. You can then understand the extent to which the Hearst Press attempted to minimize the nature of this uprising. Center of the battle, eye of the storm. What was the center of the battle? Here is the Examiner fixing the location. Quote, "The most terrific part of the battle raged about Mission and Stewart Streets. The ILA Hall is at 113 Stewart Street," the article continues. "And reinforcements for the brick-throwing army came continually out of the hall as the police jammed them back up Stewart, toward Market, and out Mission. Police threw several long-range shells through the windows of the hall, and several shots were fired through the windows. At least 2 and possibly more strikers," the Examiner continues, "were later carried out of the hall to the street wounded. One striker was placed in a police car, but when he saw where he was, despite his wounds, he snarled defiance of the police." Later in this gripping account, sanitized as it is by the Examiner, the central role of the all at 113 Stewart Street is manifest. Quote, "Police poured volleys of tear gas projectiles through the windows and doors until the strikers swarmed out. The fight was carried up to the doors of the hall inside the International Longshoremen Association's headquarters. The strikers were shot down at the door and carried inside. Tear gas shells were fired into the building. The choking fumes drove the men out. Strikers stripped to the waist staggered from the door, one carrying a wounded man in his arms," unquote. This graphic, point clear description of the struggle at ground zero of the general strike is overwhelmingly clear in the words of the Examiner, brothers and sisters, is irrefutable account of the pivotal and heroic role in these historic events of the brothers and sisters centered at ground zero. The ILA building and hall is amplified by the Los Angeles Times. But, Brad, tell us about the full extent of the duplicity of the official fiction orchestrated by the developers before the San Francisco Planning Commission and now the Board of Supes.
The Planning Commission has forwarded to the Board of Supervisors their negative declaration of the historic qualities that they falsely found regarding the hall. They had taken from the developers' hired architectural historians the negative statement that declares that there is no historic value to this building, there's no important persons associated with this structure, that there are no historic events took place in this structure. These complete opposites of the fact are standing right now, and this has been presented to the Board of Supervisors to be voted on or rejected. We need your support to reject this. Is labor's history going to be rejected entirely? Will this building be removed? We have to take a stand to oppose that.
Well, Brad, you and I appeared last night at the San Francisco Labor Council meeting. We called Brother Tim Paulson. Although we weren't on the agenda, and of course late notice, and the Labor Council is always jam-packed with issues, but they put us on as added business. We came on and we gave a report, and I can tell you, brothers and sisters, it was electrifying. Immediately, they called for the order of business to be reopened. Unanimously, the San Francisco Labor Council endorsed the appeal and summoned Brother Tim Paulson, the leader of the Labor Council, to appear at the hearing and to represent the Labor Council in denouncing this fraud and in supporting, of course, the preservation of the hall at 113 Stewart. And every single labor union member there is contacting their officers and their ranks to mobilize for a huge turnout. I had a call on my cell this morning from Peter Olney of the ILW International. Peter is on board. He thanks us for what we've done. They're distributing the document that we prepared, and Bradley's extraordinary work is now galvanizing the whole of the trade union movement in San Francisco, and above all, our brothers and sisters amongst the longshore, of course.
I'd like to let our listeners know what they can do. If you send your email to us at takingaim@pacbell.net, we will send you a copy of the appeal and the complete document written by Bradley and Ralph, called An Affront to San Francisco, An Assault Upon Organized Labor and Working People Everywhere. That includes the entire history as well as photographs, contemporary photographs from 1934. The appeal, which we'd like you to sign, will also be sent to Chris Daly. He's the supervisor in whose district of San Francisco the 113 Stewart Street building exists, and also to David Chu, who's the president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Chris Daly's email is Chris, C-H-R-I-S, dot Daly, D-A-L-Y, at sfgov, S-F-G-O-V, dot org. And the president of the Board of Supervisors' email is David dot C-H-I-U at sfgov dot org. And also, we will put these documents on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Again, please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net and distribute this document around the world. We've already been getting signatories, people involved in labor, from different countries such as the United Kingdom and from places throughout the United States. This is not just a San Francisco issue. This is an issue for working people throughout the world. This is the location of one of the seminal moments in workers' history. 113 Stewart Street, the ILA headquarters from 1933 to 35, ground zero for the 1934 San Francisco General Strike.
Maya, just to, we cited the Examiner Press. I think I'll take one moment to convey the Los Angeles Times account, one of many, because it is absolutely electrifying itself. The hottest part of the battle, the Examiner's irrefutable documentation of the pivotal and heroic role in these historic events of the brothers and sisters centered at Ground Zero, which was the ILA building and hall, is very much amplified by the Los Angeles Times account of July 6, 34. Quote, "Here is the hottest part of the battle, along Stewart Street from Howard to Market. No mistake about that. It centers at the ILA headquarters. See the Mounties ride up towards that front of stragglers. It's massed across the street, a solid front of men. Take a pair of opera glasses and look at their faces. They are snarling and jeering at the oncoming armed Mounties. This is war, boys! The men in front are kneeling like sprinters at the mark. Clatter, clatter, clatter come the bricks. Tinkle goes a window. This is war, boys! And this Stewart Street between Howard and Mission is one of the warmest spots American industrial conflict has ever seen. Crack and boom. Sounds just like a gas bomb. But no blue smoke this time. Back scrambles the mob, and two men lie on the sidewalk. Their blood trickles in a crimson stream away from their bodies. Over it all spreads an air of unutterable confusion. Sirens keep up a continual screaming in the streets. You hear them. It's 2 o'clock. The street battle has gone on an hour. How many are shot? No one knows. Maybe they dragged some of the wounded up to ILA headquarters. Yes, they did just that. The police consolidate their positions now at Mission and Stewart. They still have their machine guns. The troops are coming. All afternoon, the militia has been mobilizing. Win or die. Now it's apparently win or die for the strikers in the next few hours. The time from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock drags for the police. It goes on the wings of wind for the rioters. At 3 o'clock they start again, the fight surging once more around Stewart and Mission Streets. Here's a corner the police have to hold. It is the key to the waterfront, the strategic key, and it is in the shadow of the ILA headquarters. The rocks start filling the air again. The police start firing again, the pistol shots, the rifle shots, the blast from the shotguns. Again, the men fall in the streets. The blood trickles slowly down the slanting sidewalks. Panic grips the east end of Market Street. The ferry crowds are now involved. The troops are coming, unquote. Brothers and sisters, this is a class war. This is a war where working people stood firm and took their losses minimally accounted for in the history of this period. And this is what they want to wipe off the map, because the crisis confronting working people, where California is bankrupt, where jobs are being destroyed, where mortgages are being wiped out, yes, that crisis is now brought once again the conditions which gave rise to that working class resistance, which is the only means through which we will transform our reality, brothers and sisters. That's what's at stake here. That's why this sneak attack to suppress the reality of their destruction of this living emblem of our history. They want to wipe it from physical existence and remove it from our living memory.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Sneak Attack on Labor History, a conversation with Bradley Wiedmeyer, architectural historian. Brad?
Harry Bridges called this event a massacre, and he always corrected the media's use of either gun battles or riot. And it's important to remember that the other issue that the Planning Commission has suppressed is the connection with 113 Stewart Street, the ILA Hall, of important individuals who have contributed to the history of San Francisco. And the city commission is still maintaining that there is no significant person associated with this building. But it must be noted that Harry Bridges Association and that of the entire leadership of the ILA Local 3879 with 113 Stewart Street. Harry Bridges appeared in the local press for the first time in history in the San Francisco News on May 19, 1934, just 10 days into the maritime strike that had started on May the 9th. By the end of June 1934, Harry Bridges and those associated with him in the hall were household names in San Francisco. in the press and in the minds of the public, Harry Bridges' name was synonymous both with the ILA and with the Great Strike. Nothing is more graphic in this regard than the article in the San Francisco Chronicle that was dated July 7, 1934. It was accompanied by a map that delineates the events of Bloody Thursday, which, of course, was July the 5th. It is highlighted by the shading area. It is titled The Area of Conflicts During the Afternoon. Cross indicates center of riots and gun battles. Of course, Bridges rejected that term because it was implying that the strikers had guns, which, of course, they didn't. The sole buildings labeled in this illustration are the Ferry Building and the ILA headquarters. The cross indicated on this illustration is placed exactly at the ILA headquarters at 113 Stewart Street. The description of the passion and intensity of emotion infusing the outrage over the slaughter of the martyrs of the longshoremen and maritime workers' strike is captured by the description of these key landmarks and also by the key meeting that the Teamsters Union held on July 11th, which forwarded the whole events, the events towards the general strike.
Brad, it's very interesting because the strike of the ILA was because they wanted an ILA-controlled hiring hall. And this was the first reason for the strike. And on May 9th, the longshoremen in Bellingham, Seattle, Tacoma, Aberdeen, Portland, Astoria, San Francisco, Oakland, Stockton, San Pedro, and San Diego struck. And that cut off nearly 2,000 miles of coast. What the employer then did was to bring in students, most of them recruited from the University of California, approximately 1,700 of them to unload the ships. And they housed the strike breakers in floating boarding houses on, you know, on boats. They couldn't dare put them on land.
I think here what is critical, as Brad was indicating, is that this planning commission made a bald statement that not only that the building had no significance historically, had played no part in the development of the city, but that there was no one associated with it that had played any significant role in the development and history of San Francisco.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, Ralph, the significance of this strike and the role of Harry Bridges.
Just listen to this account that Brad was starting to reference. Go ahead, Maya.
This strike of the longshoremen needed support because the employers were bringing in the strike breakers. And what happened then, and what Brad was referring to, was the mass meetings that the Teamsters then held in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Oakland, and Seattle. And the Teamsters decided overwhelmingly that they wouldn't haul the goods to and from the docks. So that meant that the strike breakers' efforts were fruitless. And then many of the Teamsters joined the picket lines. And this was the beginning of what then would become the San Francisco General Strike when the other unions also went out in support.
But how did it come about? Listen to this, brothers and sisters. The Teamsters organize a meeting, and what happens? Quote, this is the Los Angeles Times, a deafening chant of Bridges, Bridges, Bridges brought Harry Bridges onto the program and the platform to speak. Harry Bridges' speech was met by a tumultuous response from the assembled Teamsters. It led not only to the Teamsters joining the general strike, but appealing to other major unions to follow their example. 3 years later, on July 17, 1937, Harry Bridges' full-page photo appeared on the cover of Time magazine under the caption, "Labor's Harry Bridges, a Trotsky to Lewis's Stalin." The long article was the focal point of the issue and addressed Harry Bridges' quote, rise to national fame, his entry quote, to the CIO's high command, taking rank with men like Philip Murray of the Steelworkers Organizing Committee, Sidney Hillman of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers, Howard Fleming of the Oilfield Gas Well and Refinery Workers, Charles P. Howard of the Typographical Union. Then, Time magazine detailing Harry Bridges' rise to national leadership and his premier role in the ILA under his inspiration at 113 Stewart Street, where Harry Bridges was based, where his leadership was honed, Time adds, quote, so great is the prestige of Harry Bridges among the rank and file of insurgent maritime labor that he towers above both rivals and loyal allies, nor is his power confined to the West Coast. Even tall, tattooed Joe Curran and his Atlantic Coast deckhands take orders from dour-faced Harry Bridges. Harry Bridges' position in the new CIO drive was clearly indicated when John Lewis closeted himself with the San Francisco leader for an hour just before the Maritime Conference assembled. This is, again, Time magazine. But this hired hand of the big corrupt developer who bribes politicians fabricates a report in which they state there is no figure associated with this building who has made any contribution of any distinction to the development and history of the city of San Francisco. Brothers and sisters, it is the measure of the lie that they are obligated to suppress the living history, the vibrant history, the electrifying history so captured in this article by Time magazine.
Ralph, the significance of Bridges bringing the Teamsters into the struggle was very important, because once you had the Teamsters, you had no deliveries. And at the same time, Bridges organized the other unions to join with the ILA. And other maritime workers, as the ships came to port, entire crews walked off and joined the longshoremen. So that by May 21st, you had 4,500 sailors, marine firemen, water tenders, cooks, stewards, and the other licensed officers striking. And they established the Joint Marine Strike Committee with five representatives from each of the 10 unions. Now, this broke a tradition of each of the unions sort of scabbing on each other. And you had here in 1934, with the work of Harry Bridges, bringing together all the maritime unions so that there was unity among the workers, and also bringing in the Teamsters. And later on, what you had is the economy of San Francisco reeling after 45 days. And that's when the Chamber of Commerce and the police commissioners and the industrial association said, this has got to stop. And they came down hard on all the pickets and brought out their brute force. Brad, you did an incredible job researching this, and also through the Bancroft Library and other sources, coming up with a detailed history. What impact do you think this is going to have?
Well, on the 75th anniversary that we're already into, I think it can inspire people to respond, can take this example for the economic crisis that we're facing today. It's really inspiring that the ILA took the issues of coastwide organizing, the entire Pacific coast. They took the issue of the six-hour day and 30-hour week and the hiring hall, things that completely turned around the situation overnight with the victory of the 1934 strike, things that I'm sure many people thought were absolutely pie in the sky in the beginning of the year. They had been organizing starting in 33. There was a coastwide conference that was held at the end of February of 34 and into the early days of March. And then that was followed by the overwhelming vote of 10 to 1 for the strike on March the 7th. And through the intervening weeks until the strike actually did begin on May 7th, there were efforts at mediation and government intervention that the union was able to face off, and it was repeated again during the strike in June. And it was the industrial association thought they were so successful that their newspapers had published that the strike was over in the middle of June, but it was rejected by all the marine unions overwhelmingly, and the strike continued. And that led then to the violent repression on Bloody Thursday.
Bloody Thursday is July 5th. This is the day after the July 4th holiday. And it's in that morning that the police charged 2,000 pickets who had gathered to stop the trucks coming off the pier. That's when the police initiated the barricade fighting. So as a result of the attack on these 2,000 pickets, an entire group of people from San Francisco came out, other workers, and you had 5,000 people gathering. And that's when, as you mentioned before, the police turned out with this new gas attack and switched to guns on a larger scale. But this wasn't sufficient. The governor of California ordered in 1,700 National Guardsmen who closed the Embarcadero with barbed wire, creating an entire imprisoned camp for the strikers, the pickets, and also the crowds that came out. And they set up machine gun nests, and they created an armed camp. And it's this that the workers rebelled against, too. And that's what led to the general strike, because everyone felt the unity with the striking workers. Let's discuss the building itself, because in fact, this building is in great part stands just as it did in 1934.
Well, before we do that, Maya, and we should do that, I think we need to look very carefully, brothers and sisters, at this history. We have to register, of course, the frenzied attempt to do what the Zionists do with the Palestinian people. They want to physically remove this building. They want to wipe it off the map, and they want to remove it from history. They want to remove it from our memory. They want to change our consciousness, and that's the nature of class war. But the question that is, of course, I'm sure, in every brother's and sister's mind as they listen to this incredible account of the living struggle that defined the emergence of the working class in California, and by extension in the nation at large, because have no doubt about it, the emergence of labor in the 1930s flows from the struggles of the longshore workers in California. The 1934 strike is the pivotal moment in labor finding its voice, in labor finding its common strength. And what is the lesson we must derive, brothers and sisters? That the fist of labor, now joined together in common struggle, did not carry the day to class power, to state power. The fist of labor showed the passion and the capacity of the demeaned and defiled working people who produce all value. But where is the political outcome of this? What happened to the struggle of the longshore workers? What happened to the struggle of the Teamsters? What is the outcome of the general strike in California? It gave a new sense of class understanding and class solidarity to the working class. But what it did not do, brothers and sisters, is to create the political expression of our class entitlement. We did not create the political vehicle. We did not break with the capitalist parties. There was no separation from the state and from the federal government. It was Franklin Roosevelt's government which was overseeing the strike breaking, the troops, the slaughter, the absolute ruthless unleashing of gas and automatic weapons on unarmed people. Striking for what? For a living wage. Striking to be able to maintain the ability to feed their families. We need a political voice to challenge those people who fabricate documents, who change history, who develop our cities in the name of rapacious exploitation, create the conditions of the crisis engulfing our society today. Nothing has changed. They're just more brazen and more powerful, more ruthless, and the human price is ever greater. So, brothers and sisters, the lesson of 34, which they want to wipe off the map, is that this is the little beginning. First, we are in the streets. Then we have our consciousness, then we have our leaders, and then we build a political instrument for challenging the state. Because absent that, brothers and sisters, we'll be celebrating in another 75 years the heroic moments of resistance to the current crisis, and we'll have gone no further. Brothers and sisters, let's be clear. This is a question of class power, of who rules, and we have to also ask the question, which side are you on? That's what taking aim is about, brothers and sisters. That question must be addressed.
Well, it was very interesting that in 1934, the Industrial Association, which was the group of the leading capitalists in San Francisco, met down on the peninsula in one of the manors of one of the great families of the maritime industry, and they... This conclave included the marine owners and all of the major corporations, Pacific Gas and Electric, et cetera. And also the six daily newspapers were in attendance at this event, so that it was, you know, clear that it was an orchestrated campaign against the strike, the general strike of 120 unions. That's important to keep in mind, that the other side is completely organized.
Brad, I think we should make clear that San Francisco has a tradition, and the Planning Commission asserts a responsibility to preserve historic buildings. So the first thing that had to be done was to deny that this building had any history associated with San Francisco, and specifically, as you mentioned before, that any of the noted citizens of San Francisco had any connection to this building. So could you go further into how the Heinz Company distorted the history of this building, and also how the Planning Commission then accepted this false history rather than the true history?
Well, when there's a development that comes along, they're required to, by law, to research the history. And the Planning Commission failed not only to make the most elementary inquiry into the accuracy and credibility of the claim in the Historic Resource Evaluation Report that the ILA Hall lacked historical significance. The report outright fabricates the nature of 113 Stewart Street. States, the project site building is located immediately to the right, south, from where the strikers were gunned down on July 5, 1934. The project site building was not a union labor hall, but was a restaurant and marine supply shop that was frequented by longshoremen during the period. Although the building was part of the backdrop for the Great Strike of 1934, it does not appear to have a strong association with this historical event.
That's an outright bald-faced lie.
Every single aspect of this is a lie, because this was the Union Hall itself, and it wasn't the backdrop. It was the nerve center.
And it was no restaurant. It is a grotesque.
Well, they establish a mess hall at the Union Hall to feed the strikers.
Yes, that's of course that's part of the day-to-day survival of the strike. But they are here, of course, denying that there's any political or trade union operation going on whatsoever. This is the nature of capitalist fabrication and the collusion of the press. And here, in this very moment, the Planning Commission is embracing this fiction. And what is the authorship of the fiction, of the historical resource document on which they are relying? It is the developer's hired hand, Page and Turnbull, which is a very prominent law firm, which prepares this fabricated document, this tissue of lies, and then hires the most noted lobbyist, David Luman, to basically bribe everybody to go lobby every individual member of the Planning Commission and of the Board of Supervisors around this complete fabrication about the nature of the site. The Planning Commission then deployed improperly its baseless negative finding regarding a supposed absence of any historic significance for the site. But it did more than that, brothers and sisters. It aborted the required environmental impact report, which is stipulated by the California Environmental Quality Act. And finally, there is a very strict height limitation in this classic waterfront district, which is one of the most colorful and charismatic and characteristic aspects of San Francisco, and to which tourists are attracted all over the year and from all over the world. But this, the significance of this sleight of hand is that the environmental impact reports themselves are more meticulous in assessing issues of historic significance. So the Planning Commission actually determined, quote, there is no historic, social, or cultural significance to the structure itself.
And Bradley,
imagine that.
Bradley, you also ascertain that the building, in essence, is just as it was in 1934, that the foremost aspects of this building, it maintains its integrity.
That's true. The building as it exists today is exactly. If you take a picture of the historic photos from 1934, which is the period of significance for the building, with a photo of today, they're the same building. There's no question. And 1934 is the period of significance. One of the ways that the Planning Commission has falsely substituted their version of reality is by saying that the building is so altered that it no longer can communicate the historic record, of the role that it played in 1934. But if we look at the building, we see on the second floor, and that is where the ILA Hall was located, and this is the level of the existing current second-story windows, the following features comprise a virtually unaltered record of the building as it appeared in 1934 during the Great Maritime and General Strike. The window opening dimensions are the same. The number of openings have not changed. The depth of the window glass from the surface of the wall has not changed. The framing around these windows and the pilasters, which are a wall detail, have not changed at all. And also, very importantly, the crowning silhouette of the building is identical, its outline, etc. The only thing that has changed is the ground floor, and all that that the building had in the original 1934 state was the entry doorway that led to the stairs that took you up to that second floor ILA hall. And that has been somewhat altered, it's
true. That's minor.
That's very true.
And it doesn't bear on the hall itself, which was the center from which the strike was organized, where the dead were gathered, where the funeral procession occurred, and where the general strike was mobilized, where Harry Bridges emerged, where Henry Schmidt emerged, where Dutch Dietrich emerged, where John Shoemaker emerged, where the ground zero, the headquarters of the organizing, was focused and centered. This is a bogus criterion. The hall remains in situ, the documents are in-your-face fabrication, and they have to do this sneak attack because otherwise what would they confront? They confront the longshore workers once again mobilized to stop this desecration.
Well,
and that's what we're going to make sure happens.
Well, thanks to Bradley Wienmeyer, this has come to the attention of the people of San Francisco and particularly to the labor movement. And we have time to preserve 113 Stewart Street, the ILA headquarters of 1933-35, ground zero for the 1934 San Francisco General Strike. We need your help. Time is of the essence, because on Tuesday, March 17th at 4 p.m., the San Francisco Board of Supervisors has an opportunity to prevent the demolition of this historic building. We need you to act. Please send an email to takingaim@pacbell.net and send your opposition to the demolition of 113 Stewart Street, your email to Supervisor Chris Daly, that's chris.daly@sfgov.org, and to the President of the Board of Supervisors, david.chiu@sfgov.org. Please look on our website, takingaimradio.com, for more information and how you can act to preserve labor history. Ralph, concluding remarks.
The Maritime Strike forged the General Strike of 34. It was the decisive moment in the history of San Francisco. It has more importance historically than the earthquake and fire of 1906. The general strike that emerged from this is more important than the events of 1906 because of the struggle representing a historic coming of age of organized labor. It had global impact, brothers and sisters. That is the legacy that we are going to make sure is continued and remembered, because we have to grasp that this is our history and this is our present that they are trying to destroy. And we call upon the ILWU and all of organized labor in San Francisco to rise in defense of our fallen martyrs, to learn the lessons that our greatest leaders have taught us by example. We are going to turn this tide with your help, brothers and sisters. Taking AIM signs off on that note. We'll be with you next week.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We want to thank Bradley Wiedmeyer, architectural historian, for being with us and also for discovering the demolition, the proposed demolition of 113 Stewart Street. Join us next week and visit our website, takingaimradio.com.